Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Cornerstone Protocol: Finding Wealth Without Sorrow by Willy Cheng is positioned as a work of personal finance and wealth ethics rather than a conventional investment manual. The title and subtitle place the book in a tradition that treats wealth as something to be built on a stable moral foundation, not merely accumulated through technique, risk-taking, or market timing, because detailed public summaries and independent reviews are limited. The safest reading is that the book addresses the question of how a person can pursue financial increase without creating emotional, relational, spiritual, or ethical cost. Its likely audience is readers who want a structured way to think about money, prosperity, responsibility, and peace of mind together. The book stands apart from purely tactical finance titles by emphasizing the condition of the builder as much as the mechanics of building. Its central concern is not only whether wealth can be gained, but whether it can be held without sorrow. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, wealth is treated as a foundation problem before it is treated as a financial outcome. The most distinctive idea suggested by the Cornerstone Protocol is that wealth depends on the quality of its foundation. The word cornerstone signals a first principle before techniques, products, or strategies are considered. The reader must ask what the financial life is being built on. This framing differs from mainstream personal finance books that often begin with budgeting, compounding, asset allocation, or entrepreneurship. Cheng's title implies that wealth without sorrow requires prior attention to motives, values, and boundaries. The issue is not only how money is earned, but whether its pursuit distorts judgment, weakens relationships, or creates obligations that later become burdens. In that sense, the book appears to treat money as a revealing instrument. Financial choices expose what a person trusts, fears, and prioritizes. A sound protocol, therefore, has to define the limits within which wealth is pursued. This gives the book a more ethical and reflective orientation than books focused primarily on optimization. Its practical value lies in encouraging readers to test financial decisions against a stable foundation before measuring them by returns alone. Secondly, Finding Wealth Without Sorrow reframes prosperity as more than accumulation. The subtitle Finding Wealth Without Sorrow is the clearest guide to the book's core concern. It separates prosperity from mere accumulation and asks whether financial gain can coexist with peace, integrity, and emotional freedom. This is an important distinction because wealth can be accompanied by anxiety, debt pressure, family conflict, moral compromise, or constant comparison. A book organized around this theme is less likely to define success only by net worth, and more likely to ask whether wealth improves or burdens the life around it. The phrase also suggests that some forms of gain carry hidden costs. Money earned through excessive strain, speculative behavior, broken trust, or neglect of responsibilities may increase assets while reducing well-being. The book, therefore, fits within a values-based finance tradition that treats sorrow as a diagnostic category. If financial progress produces fear, secrecy, relational damage, or ethical unease, then the wealth is incomplete. The practical implication is that readers should evaluate financial decisions by both visible results and invisible consequences. This makes the book relevant to people who have seen money solve some problems while creating others. Thirdly, the protocol concept suggests discipline rules rather than impulsive money behavior by using the word protocol. The book appears to present wealth building as a disciplined process governed by principles rather than a collection of isolated tips. A protocol implies sequence, guardrails, and repeatable decision standards in personal finance. This matters because many damaging outcomes come from reactive choices, chasing quick returns, borrowing without a repayment logic, spending for status, or making emotional commitments before counting long-term costs. A protocol-oriented approach encourages readers to slow decisions down and ask whether an action fits the larger architecture of their financial life. This is different from advice that depends heavily on market conditions or personal charisma. A rule-based system can help people maintain consistency when incentives are confusing or emotions are high. The concept also suggests that the book may be concerned with prevention as much as growth. The aim is not simply to repair damage after financial sorrow appears, but to reduce the likelihood of that sorrow through prior discipline. Readers can benefit intellectually by seeing money management as a set of structured commitments, not as a series of disconnected reactions. Fourthly, ethical earning and responsible stewardship are central to the book's likely financial vision. The connection between wealth and sorrow naturally raises the question of how wealth is earned, used, and preserved. The Cornerstone Protocol appears to belong to a category of books that links prosperity with stewardship. In this view, money is not morally neutral once it enters human decisions. It affects obligations, power, generosity, and accountability. Ethical earning matters because financial gain obtained through exploitation, deception, or neglect can produce consequences that are not captured on a balance sheet. Responsible stewardship also matters after money is gained. Wealth can be consumed, hoarded, displayed, invested, shared, or deployed for long-term purposes. A stewardship lens asks whether the holder of wealth is becoming more responsible or more controlled by possession. This gives the book a broader scope than income generation alone. It encourages the reader to consider the moral afterlife of money, what habits it forms, whom it serves, and what responsibilities it creates. Such an approach is especially relevant for readers seeking an alternative to finance writing that treats money mainly as personal leverage or private security. Lastly, the book is best understood as reflective financial guidance, not a technical investment manual, because there is little public evidence of detailed investment formulas, market research, or specialized financial models attached to the book. The Cornerstone Protocol should be approached as reflective guidance rather than as a technical manual. This distinction is important for setting expectations. Readers looking for portfolio construction, tax planning, security selection, or quantified retirement models may need complementary resources. The book's value is more likely to lie in clarifying the principles by which financial choices are made. That can still be highly practical, because many financial failures begin before technical execution. They begin with unclear goals, unexamined desires, unrealistic risk tolerance, or a willingness to sacrifice long-term stability for short-term gain. A reflective book can help readers identify these vulnerabilities. It can also provide a language for discussing money within families, faith communities, or advisory relationships where purely numerical advice is insufficient. Its limitation is that readers should not treat it as a substitute for regulated financial, legal, or tax advice. Its strength is different. It helps frame the moral and personal conditions under which technical advice should be applied. In conclusion, The Cornerstone Protocol: Finding Wealth Without Sorrow is best suited for readers who want to examine the moral and personal foundations of wealth before focusing on tactics. Asked, it will likely appeal to people interested in values-based finance, stewardship, faith-informed money decisions, and the emotional consequences of financial ambition. Its practical benefit is not that it appears to provide a specialized investment system, but that it helps readers ask better preliminary questions: what kind of wealth is worth pursuing, what costs should not be accepted, and what rules should govern financial decisions before pressure arrives. Intellectually, it contributes to a category of financial writing that treats prosperity as a whole life issue rather than a balance sheet result. Compared with similar books in personal finance, it stands out through the pairing of Protocol and Wealth Without Sorrow. That combination suggests both structure and ethical caution. It does not merely celebrate wealth creation, nor does it reject material increase. Instead, it appears to argue for a form of prosperity that remains compatible with peace, responsibility, and integrity. Readers seeking technical market guidance may need other books, but readers seeking a durable framework for principled wealth building may find its positioning useful. If you would like to support Willy Cheng, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.